Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Shuad Kutun.
You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The recent federal elections in Australia has ushered in a new government under the Labour Party with Anthony Albanese as Prime Minister. Now, among the notable names in his cabinet is Sabah-born Senator the Honourable Penny Wong as Minister of Foreign Affairs. She is in Malaysia as part of a state visit to Southeast Asia, which includes Vietnam, and also a side visit to her hometown, Kota Kinabalu. She joins us on the show today. Minister, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here. Now, thank you for having
before me. Before we kind of get into all the bilateral issues, I was hoping maybe we could start our conversation tonight by talking a little bit about your extraordinary journey from Sabah, where you were born, to, you know, Australia, where you were not just a model migrant, but you are now participating in the highest level in your adopted country's administration leadership. I want to ask you a little bit about about participating in public service, about why you chose a life of public service in Australia.
Well, I think we all want a life with purpose, don't we? And part of what we do as we're younger, and probably throughout a lot of our lives, is to try and understand or think through what is the purpose that I want to devote myself to. I'm sure you think about that. And for me, you know, I did want to contribute to a better world and a better community. And politics was the way I wanted to do that work. And, you know, I did think about doing other things. I originally enrolled in medicine, because that's what Chinese girls do, isn't it? You do maths, physics, chemistry, and you enroll in medicine. Then I was like, I don't like blood, so this is a bad idea. But I had wanted to be, to work for Médecins Sans Frontières, so to sort of contribute in that way. And so I suppose, for me, politics ultimately is about the sort of community and nation you want to live in. And in this job, the privilege is you also get to contribute to the sort of world you live in. And that's what I decided I wanted to pursue.
And but politics is a very curious route to take, because
For a migrant,
it's probably the one last citadel of a dominant culture. And you know, and I want to ask you about that, Penny, because there's been a lot of hand-wringing. On one hand, people watch your success and they celebrate it here in Malaysia. On the other, there was this feeling that, oh, you're part of the brain drain. You're also representative of a group of Malaysians that perhaps were excluded or continue to be excluded in the core, the central part of Malaysian political life, because of your ethnicity, because of your gender, because of your sexuality. The question is, why did Australia become that place? Because we know Australia wasn't always open. It had a white Australia policy for many decades.
When my parents married, the white Australia policy had not been finally dismantled. So my life traverses, and my parents' marriage and lives traverse a great deal of change in Australian culture. So look, I'm not going to get drawn on into Malaysian politics. That's for Malaysia to you know, and the Malaysian people to work through what sort of society and they seek to be, and those sorts of issues that you raise. But one of the things that I think is an enormous strength for Australia is our diversity, and that we derive, you know, our community comes from so many parts of the world. I think people think historically of Australia as an Anglo-Saxon dominated culture, very British. I mean, actually, one in two Australians is either born overseas or has a parent born overseas. You know, we're a very diverse country, a very multicultural nation. Now, you said something really important, Sherrod, in your question, where you talked about the last citadel of the dominant culture, and that's true. So what I've observed, because I went into politics quite young, is that it took a long time for more people who looked like me or came from my sort of background to be represented in Parliament. But I think we might have, you know, we're getting there. The last election from the Labor Party saw so many, particularly women, but not only, people from migrant backgrounds, immigrant backgrounds, into the Parliament. So I'm really proud of that. And I'm really pleased, because I do think democracies our democracy best serves the community when it represents the community.
Has it been a long and arduous battle to get more diversity into Parliament? I mean, does the current Parliament now better reflect the diversity that you say Australia is? How might you see in this administration that
I think this last election has been a real inflection point because I think you've seen many more people from Malaysian Chinese backgrounds, Cambodian Chinese backgrounds, South Asian backgrounds come into our parliament. But the first part of your question was, has that been a challenge? It has been a long journey. And, and you can understand that because if I think about, Australian Chinese of my generation, our parents would have said, you go into business, you go into medicine, you go into things where you can provide security for yourself and for your family without relying on government so much, whereas politics is inherently about government. So that's a very different cultural
And you want to keep your head down as well as a new migrant.
That's right, you keep your head down. Yeah. You keep your head down and you work hard. So I guess, the difference for me is my mother, who married, my mother's a white Australian from a farming background, who married a Chinese in the 1960s. So I think for her, she never really kept her head down, okay? So I probably inherited some of that.
Yeah. I want to ask you about some of the problems, because there's a tension, right? Somebody like you has tremendous success. It's also, notionally at least, a loss to Malaysia. And Malaysia loses, and it's a big issue here, about brain drain. But from the Australian side of that equation, you're getting talent, but you're also getting now increasingly Malaysians, and I understand Malaysians top the list of people seeking political asylum, perhaps really with the objective of working for a couple of years in Australia. Mm. And they work in food orchards and they're becoming undocumented workers in Australia. Is that an issue for your government in dealing with our government?
Right, there's quite a lot of things that you raise there. First, in terms of people who are there to work. We're a Labor government, we care about conditions for working people and compliance with our industrial laws is not negotiable for us. So I think you will see, obviously there may be people who do the wrong thing, employers who do the wrong thing, but from the government's position, we will always work to make sure people are treated fairly. That's the law, but it's also where we are philosophically. In terms of protection, visas, etc. There's a set of principles in international law, a set of domestic laws, and regardless of where someone comes from, we would apply those principles in terms of how we would assess people. So, I think the bilateral relationship with Malaysia between our countries is long-standing. It is deep. There are strong historical, economic, and defence and strategic links. And there are strong people-to-people links. I think you said you have family in Australia. Well, you're not alone. I mean, so many Malaysians have family in Australia and vice versa. And so many Malaysians have studied in Malaysia. So from my father, who's a Colombo Plan scholar, that generation, to the thousands of Malaysians who are in Australia studying at the moment. I think your foreign minister told me today, told me in our meeting, that it's the largest number of Malaysian students overseas are in Australia. So we have so many aspects to our relationship. And the key point is we share a future. We all live in the same region. And our future lies here.
Can I ask you about the recent case? So the Malaysian transgender entrepreneur Nur Sajat was recently granted asylum in Australia. And for that, I think the human rights groups have all commended Australia's part in that, saying that Australia deserves a great deal of credit for offering her asylum. My question is the next step. So human rights groups have also said, well, maybe countries like Australia should do more, do more to perhaps take a stand against some of the intolerant practices from, her host country, from Malaysia. Will Australia, under your tenure as foreign minister, be taking a more pro-liberal stand on these issues?
Well, first, again, I go back to what I said earlier. Protection of visas, protection assessments are done arm's length from, you know, the foreign minister. You know, we have a country governed by the rule of law. We have a set of legal arrangements or legal principles and a legal framework that these issues are assessed in. So, you know, they're not political decisions. They're decisions that reflect, you know, our domestic legal framework, which in turn reflects our international obligations. Look, I think there is, you have to deal with, being in the region, there are a great many different sort of views, a great many different cultural tendencies, and you know, we have a set of values about who we are, and they go to inclusion, and they go to equality. And that's how we will speak about these issues. You know, we recognise they're not shared; those are not, you know, views that everybody shares. And you always have to manage those differences respectfully. But we know who we are, and we know what our values are, and we're not going to step away from them. Notwithstanding that others may not have the same views.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue our conversation with the Honourable Penny Wong, Minister of Foreign Affairs from Australia. Stay tuned to consider this. We will be right back. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Gutten. We're speaking today to Senator the Honourable Penny Wong. She is Australia's foreign minister. She's in town visiting on a state visit to Malaysia, to Southeast Asia, which includes Vietnam, as well as a side visit to her hometown, Kota Kinabalu. Minister, last year, bilateral ties between our two countries were elevated. Mm-hmm. We went from a strategic partnership to now a comprehensive strategic partnership. And I just want to ask you what that means.
Beyond, it means we really like each other.
Beyond the diplomatic nomenclature, what does that really mean, and how are we taking our relationship to the next level?
It's an indication of the weight and importance the nations assign to each to that relationship, and it means that the relationship is broader and deeper, essentially. So we try to cover more areas, and we try to have stronger and deeper engagement in particular areas. Now, as you said, you know, it was only announced last year. We've obviously had COVID, so I think it is, as I discussed with your foreign minister, I think it is important we put greater momentum into developing some of the practical and concrete engagement within the comprehensive strategic partnership, and we talked about a range of issues that, you know, I think Malaysia was keen to pursue and Australia was keen to pursue, more dialogue on education and more concrete engagement on education. Digital transformation, so obviously that's been an aspect of Malaysia's economic recovery and economic future. We're also interested in climate change. Obviously, that's one of the areas that the new government has made a priority. So I'm feeling very optimistic and hopeful about the sort of work we can do together within the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership.
I do want to ask you a kind of practical question. Mm. You had a new government. This CSP was signed under the previous administration. Mm. Malaysia's had three administrations, 4 years. Do these changes have any impact on this structure? Is it essentially permanent despite the political volatility, at least in our country?
Look, I think that one of the things we should draw strength from is that the bilateral relationship has subsisted and strengthened and at times weathered challenges with very different administrations in power in both countries over many decades. Yeah, and what that points to is the resilience of the relationship and the recognition by all parts of the political spectrum in both countries that, you know, we live in the same region, our futures lie in this region, that our security and our prosperity are interlinked and we're going to work together to try and improve our outcomes. And so, of course, different people will have different emphases, different governments will have different priorities, but ultimately, I can speak for Australia, this is a bilateral relationship that has support from both parties of government. That we will bring different emphases and a different way of engaging, and I think you've seen some of that since we've been elected, but fundamentally, sort of structurally, both parties of government are very supportive of the relationship.
Well, you've held the Minister for Finance portfolio, and you've held the Climate Minister portfolio as well. Now that you're holding Foreign Affairs, what have you identified as some of the key issues that you think need to be addressed during your tenure?
Bilaterally or in the world?
In the world, sorry, yes.
No.
Well, you're right, yes.
Well, I think, we live in a really challenging time. It's a time of great change. And there are, we can point to a number of drivers of that change. One has been the pandemic, which has been, really economically difficult for many countries, particularly developing countries and also middle-income countries. Then there is climate, climate change has an effect on our economies, it has an effect on our health, it has an effect on our security. And then we have what people talk about as strategic competition, which is the competition between the superpowers, the great powers. This is not a new thing for the region. In fact, historically, Southeast Asia has had to navigate competition between great powers. So all of those dynamics do mean, there's a lot of change. So I think what we need to do is work out how we best navigate that change in the interest of our people. And we should think about, when we do that, what are we doing this for? And so rather than what we're against, what are we for? And if I could just say, this is what I always say. We're for a region that is stable, peaceful and prosperous, where sovereignty is respected, a region that is predictable, and where all powers, small and large, are able to prosper and to thrive.
How might this be a new chapter in Australia's relationship with China?
The election of our government or this time?
With your tenure as Foreign Minister, how would you like the relationship between Australia and China to evolve?
Obviously we've said a couple of things. We think that the trade measures against Australia need to be removed, and we've made that clear publicly. We've also said, obviously, the new government is not going to step away from Australia's interests and Australian values. Having all said that, we also think engagement would be preferable for both nations.
Minister, there is the issue of Myanmar, and because you brought up sovereignty, it seems appropriate to pull that story into the picture, partly because Malaysia has, and under this current foreign minister, taken a very proactive stance, wanting to actually break the consensus of non-interference. Where does Australia stand, and is it working with ASEAN in order to deal with the Myanmar situation?
I think Malaysia, Indonesia, and a number of the ASEAN nations have shown a real leadership, and ASEAN as an entity has shown leadership around Myanmar, and that's welcome. This question of sovereignty is an interesting one. What are the boundaries of sovereignty when choices impact upon the stability of the region, and we have been supportive of the ASEAN 5-point plan. We've been supportive of ASEAN efforts to try and work with the various groups within Myanmar to achieve a solution. Myanmar is, it's a really, really, I think, tragic situation, isn't it? For particularly, I don't know, you know, to what extent Malaysians were engaged, but Australians viewed that transition to democracy that was in place as really important, and a lot of Australians were engaged in different ways in that movement. So, you know, that's been, I think, really saddening for many in the Australian community, and obviously in the diaspora, many of whom are in Australia.
Minister, if I may pivot the conversation from foreign policy to climate policy.
Okay.
And I think many of us are curious to know what kind of climate action is going to be taken under this new government, particularly as Australia has been notoriously labelled as a climate laggard.
Sure.
How are we going, what changes are we going to see both in the short term and perhaps in the longer term?
Sure. Well, you will see a government with much more ambition and a government that is committed to action on climate. We were elected with a much more ambitious policy position. We have reflected some of that already in terms of our indication to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate that we will have a more ambitious target for 2030, so the net zero emissions by 2050, but also a 43% reduction by 2030. We have said we will transform the energy sector and the energy grid. We would anticipate over 80% of our energy will come from renewable sources by the end of this decade. So that's, they're the sort of top line issues. But just so people understand, we were elected with a very ambitious plan on climate. I was the first climate minister. Prime Minister Albanese was actually was the person in our party, a spokesperson, who drafted our policy for the 2007 election, which was much more ambitious on climate and renewable energy. So, and Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, you have two people whose personal commitment to this issue is very strong, and you have a government, a Labor government, whose commitment to this issue is very strong. So, you know, I hope we can return to the position we used to be in, which is people looked to us for constructive engagement and some leadership on climate.
Minister, where are you going to next, and what exactly is your sort of short-term agenda globally? Where does Australia want to lead the conversation?
Well, the region first, and I think you've seen that in what we've done, whether it's into Southeast Asia or the Pacific. That's where I focused my energy initially, and I've done that deliberately for the reasons we've discussed. And in part, it reflects our view about the future. It also reflects our party's tradition in government of really prioritising and focusing on the region. That will mean engagement about what we can do, but it will also mean listening and understanding the perspectives that other countries in the region have, and listening to them about how we can best work together.
Do you anticipate challenges in this role? Okay,
so there's always challenges.
What challenges can you anticipate that you can, perhaps mitigate some of the impact?
That's a very dangerous thing for a foreign minister to respond to, isn't it?
Right, to speculate about the future.
To speculate about what might be difficult. There are always challenges, and part of what do foreign ministers do? Australian foreign minister, my job is to explain my country to the world and explain the world to my country. It's also to work with other countries to try and find areas where we have common interests.
May I ask you, in the minute or so that we have left, what is Brand Australia to the world?
Brand Australia. Well, you see, I think we are a diverse, modern country that is multicultural, has people from all parts of the region and the world, and that is also, at its heart, a country with a First Nations peoples who are the oldest continuing culture on the planet, and with whom, we are committed to walking a path of reconciliation and reform and progress.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It's been great. Thank you.
That was our conversation with Senator the Honourable Penny Wong, Australian Minister of Foreign Affairs. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching.
Good night.
Thank you.